Each month on WISO Weekend, we hear from faculty and staff from area colleges and universities on a wide variety of subjects. It's a way to bring Miami Valley research and thinking into the public arena and a way to enlighten the world with local knowledge. This week, our guest is Kimberly Kendricks with Central State University.
Today, I'm going to talk to you about gait analysis through the study of mathematics applications in robotics. So what does all of that mean? Simply enough, we're going to be studying a person's gait to determine whether or not they are threatening. And this is particularly for the military environment. When you carry a load, such as a book bag, your body's center of mass adjusts. That means that your normal pace of walking is going to be slightly different because you're carrying the load. This is particularly important for when people are carrying IEDs, or what we call bomb vests, interpretive explosive devices. The military is very interested in coming up with characteristics to determine whether or not an individual is threatening by the way they walk. So let me take you into how I derived this mathematical model through robotics and how I've applied it to this project at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Human movement is very similar to robotic movement. In graduate school, I studied a third-degree planar robot arm. Third degree simply means three joints, three joint link pairs, rather. So my shoulder is one joint, my elbow is another, and so is my wrist. So I have a third-degree planar arm. Planar simply means that we're going to be looking at this in 2D. So imagine looking at my arm in this 2D frame. Now, what we did was we looked at all the possible movements the human arm can make in a certain workspace. In fact, what I did was I solved the inverse kinematic robotic problem. Kinematics is just the study of motion, so I ignore things like mass and gravity and velocity and friction, so it makes things a lot easier. So what I'm able to do then is look at all the different combinations that the shoulder and elbow make to place the wrist at a certain point in space. So what's the problem? The forward kinematic problem says, if you know the angle of your shoulder and the angle of your elbow, you know where your wrist is going to be placed in space. That's the forward problem. Fairly simple. The inverse says, if you place your wrist at a point in space, what combinations must your elbow and shoulder make in order to keep your wrist at this position? Well, this is one combination, but so is this, and so is this. My wrist is stayed at the same place, but there are three different combinations I found in order to keep the wrist at this place. That's what we call the inverse problem, finding all combinations of the shoulder and elbow in order to place the wrist a certain point in space. So I looked at the GMF A510 robot, which is an assembly line robot used in the Saturn Automotive Plant in Tennessee. Now, this robot is typically used for picking up objects, placing objects, or screwing in objects. It has a hand, and you can apply certain tools to the hand in order to do certain tasks. So you'll see we have a body, and that body twists, and then there's a shoulder that swings, an elbow that swings, and then there's the tool, the hand. And so I was able to determine on this robot what kinds of placements there are in its workspace. One way I did that was using basic trigonometry. Picture the arm, the shoulder, elbow, and wrist. The wrist is denoted by the point AB. And using trigonometry, we're able to describe the wrist in terms of the shoulder movement and the elbow movements. And I was able to classify three sets of solutions. The first set is when there are no solutions. It means there are no configurations for the shoulder and elbow to touch any point outside of the workspace. Well, that makes sense. You can move your arm in a circular rotation, but you can't touch a point that's outside of that full extension. The same is true if you try and bend your arm back. If these measurements are not equal, then you won't be able to bend your elbow back and touch your shoulder or any other point near what we call the origin. Then we have two solutions. So two solutions, if you're talking about 2D, is simply having two shoulder and elbow configurations to touch a single point in space, so you form a diamond. And lastly, there's the case when you have one solution, and that's simply if you extend your arm all the way out so that your forearm and upper arm are collinear. So then you're able to only touch one point in space. And this is simply the circumference of your entire workspace in 2D. So those are the three classifications of solutions. So how does this relate to gait? Whether you realize it or not, your legs and arms have a rhythm when you walk. Your opposite arm and leg move in the same motion. So if you're stepping forward with your left leg, your right arm is going to be forward. The same is true if you step forward with your right leg, your left arm is going to be in motion. And so when you're walking, there's this very nice motion that occurs. And so we have four phases of the gait cycle. We have heel touch, toe off, and the swing phase for the right and left legs. Your arm has certain movements at each of those phases. So what I did was, instead of looking at a robot's arm, I looked at a human's arm at these four phases of the gait cycle. And I applied the same mathematical model. So we have several scientists in the area that have looked at studying gait, such as Nixon and Wag, Kosciuszko, Spahn, and Gafarov. The most prominent of these is Kosciuszko's study, and he was a mathematician at the Air Force Institute of Technology. He looked at shape analysis, and what he did was he digitized the human form at each of these four phases and compared the human form to that without a load and that with a load. Other scientists, such as Lawson and Weschler, have looked at human weight and had the individual step onto a metal foot plate and looked how that differed, so with and without load. So that's a very obvious way to determine whether or not someone's carrying load. But we wanted to study this by looking at those four different phases, so that's where the interest lies. Lastly, we have this approach that I'm trying here, which is an algebraic approach, which is very different to studies that have been previously done. So let me describe the obstacle course. So we're looking at human subjects, and we have about 100 human subjects that we're testing. The obstacle course, as you see in the photo, is a circular course where the individual walks clockwise and counterclockwise, up a ramp, up a flight of stairs, across a cross ramp, and down a ramp. And the individual wears their own shoes because we want to simulate a real environment. We have them walking on grass and gravel, and we videotape them about 75 to 100 feet away to simulate a real environment. The military will be taking these images from videos that they capture from parking lot cameras or videos in the mall. So we want to create that same atmosphere. The cameras may be at angles that are 15 feet high. We may be 50 to 75 feet away from the individual, and we want to be able to come up with characteristics that will help us identify them. So this is the environment that we've created. You'll see that one of our student workers from Cedarvale University is wearing a weighted vest. And the vest weighs about 25 pounds. So we have four experiments that we're running for this project. The first, we'll have an individual walk through the obstacle course without a weighted vest. The second, we'll have the individual walk through the obstacle course with a weighted vest. And the third is we'll have the individual walk through the obstacle course without the weighted vest but wearing a coat. And that's because most of the individuals that are wearing IEDs are wearing very big clothing. And so it's very difficult to determine if they're carrying a load because the coat or the large sweatshirt disguises that weight. And fourth, we'll have the individual walk through the obstacle course with the weighted vest and wearing the coat. And what we're going to do is compare the arm swing motion as well as the leg swing motion of these four different experiments to see if we can come up with a set of characteristics that will allow us to make some assumptions about a person's level of risk. So we've developed this mathematical model and we have applied it to arm swing motion. And we've come up with results that have allowed us to predict where the arm should be at 100 points of the gait cycle during those four phases. This is very helpful because we know at a normal gait that the individual's wrist should be about 30 degrees backwards at one phase of the gait cycle, maybe 45 degrees backwards at another. And this varies when the individual is carrying a load. In fact, we were able to predict wrist placement with about 20% error. Now, the reason we had the error was because we were doing a model in 2D. We were looking at a model in 2D, and all of our movements are in 3D. So the model wasn't able to predict with a 100% rate. And so now what we're doing is coming up with a model that can be applied in 3D. And what we'll do is continue to look at these four experiments and compare the results of them to come up with more characteristics that will allow us to make a more determinate conclusion about people's threat levels. So that concludes my talk here today. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Kimberly Kendricks is an assistant of mathematics at Central State University.